Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
I know about disappointing humans, bro. You know what I mean? I was a huge How I Met Your Mother fan. You know what I'm saying? I seen people talk about the Lost finale. I want you to talk about your little show, okay?
Let's get straight to it. What happened, man?
Has
anybody else in the room watched Game of Thrones before I dive in? You know, because I feel like for these kind of epic series wrap-ups, I don't like to stand on an island alone, but I think it was a hella disappointing season, and period, past two seasons, and that's because of some business things
really
that kind of trickled down into the end-all product, which might be a great discussion, right?
It is so, a good discussion.
You know, the showrunners for Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. who ran the show for over the 10-year time span entirety, during the last, when it was time to renegotiate for the last two seasons, they had already gotten a gig or an opportunity from Disney to do the next Star Wars trilogy.
Really?
Right. Hmm. So they were offered from HBO, I think, two 10-episode seasons to wrap it up.
Okay.
You know, and to, for some context for people who don't watch Game of Thrones, like that's kind of like the average okay. HBO season, 10 to 12, you know.
Okay.
But instead, the showrunners were like, nah, bro, we could do them in six. We can do the last season in six. Just make the episodes like 10 minutes longer, and we can get it done. Right? And they got this huge budget. I think it was like one episode.
Hold on. They said they could do it in six?
They could wrap it up in six.
Okay.
Six episodes.
Fuck up one. Okay.
Right. Okay. You know, it was like, yo, I'm not going to give you 10 episodes, but I'm going to give you six, but they longer.
All right.
So it kind of averages out.
All right.
So I will say the good parts, like the visual, like the graphic effects, the costumes, everything that you love Game of Thrones for was spectacular, except for the writing.
Mm.
And I think that's what suffered the most. So it was like the storylines were cut short. You know, don't you hate it when like shit that's been like built up over years, like just like has a lazy finish? You know what I mean? Like, or when you see Michael Jordan play for the Wizards.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he still put up 40.
Yeah, he put up 40, but it was
40,
but a sad 40.
Yeah,
it was a droopy 40.
Not the same. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel you.
That was a hard-fought 40.
It was a hard-fought 40.
40 points. So, yeah, that was it, man. But sometimes you just got to appreciate things for what they are.
Okay.
And understand that, hey, man, they gave us 8 years of amazing work. And
right.
Yeah, maybe they missed the playoffs or barely made into the playoffs for the last two, but you got to respect the legacy in full, so.
Okay. Did you sign the petition for a new season finale?
Do that
season
shit over.
Run it back, player.
I'm like, here's my thing. I understand how people fall in love with media and entertainment. I have too.
Right.
But, like, that shit ain't going to dictate my life. We've talked about this on the show. Like, it's so much content out here.
Mm-hmm.
There's literally got to be something for you at all times. You just got to look for it.
That's true.
And I'm just waiting on the next thing. So
that's true.
Whatever that might be.
Does that make The Wire still the best show?
Oh, absolutely. It always was.
Oh, yeah.
I bought all the box DVD sets like when I was like 15 and we just watch them until like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, just, and I was like 15 absorbing all this shit and just like loving it. But like, just like the intricate storylines and all that stuff. I'm sure, I don't know. How Much Your Mother is kind of a different format, but
we don't talk about it, man.
All right, anyway.
We don't talk about it. Anyway.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we can get carried away with these things, man.
Hey,
you know, it's because I didn't see you last week.
Man,
I missed you, man. Shout out EJ. We got EJ here. Normally, you know, we're doing things a little differently, you know,
but
we keep it informal. Welcome to Over the Shoulder.
Welcome.
We do creative commentary.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, we were kind of doing it like just interviewing people who were creators, but we also realized that we're creative entrepreneurs as well.
Right.
So it's really just like not necessarily doing the interviews and stuff. Shout out to those podcasts, but just real talk, talking shop amongst mutual creatives.
That's right.
Shout out to Full Service Radio.
Shout
out Jack Inslee in the building. Haven't seen my bro in a minute.
Yo, Jack. Can you say something so the people know you alive?
Hey, Jack been through the wire for real, bro.
Been through the wire.
Yeah.
I'm back.
Okay, good, man. Oh, thank God. Thank God for Jack. We are coming to you live in Chocolate City.
The energy is in the building, man.
From the lobby of the Line Hotel. We are right back with it. Welcome to the Over the Shoulder podcast.
Cool.
It's your opportunity to eavesdrop on two professional creators as we discuss the sources, happenings, and inspirations from the creative industry, from film to production to music to culture. Join us each week as we push the envelope on the possibilities of the creative industry. We got two hosts. We got a ghost host, as always. Shout out to Tom.
Shout out to Tom.
I see you not right there in that chair, Tom. Of course, you got your boy BMO Brown coming to you live right now. And we also have my man's over here, Backpack Matt. Welcome
hey,
back, man.
It's always good to be here in the building.
Man, I'm so happy to see
love
you.
Love you guys. This is going to be fun.
Here we go. You ready?
Yeah,
it's time for the word of the day.
The day.
Brought to you by dictionary.com. They're going to throw us some cash sometime soon, bro.
Shit, they're going to throw us some cash. I haven't checked the app out in a while, so I don't know what they're going to throw at me today. I have no idea.
It's a real easy one. Today's word of the day is self-possessed. It's with a hyphen in there, so I guess it makes it one word.
Self-possessed.
All right, give me some adjective context. Having or showing control of one's feelings, behavior, etc. Composed, unpoised, self-possessed.
Hey man, any drama that comes your way, especially on social media,
yeah,
you gotta remain self-possessed.
You gotta gather your pre-buttles.
You gotta keep the higher. Get your pre-buttles on lock.
Of course.
Get your points off efficiently.
Yeah, of course.
In and out.
Here we go. All right. We're going to jump right into it, Matt. You mind if cool. I go a little too deep, man?
Go for it. I'm going to step back. Do your thing.
Here we go. So as a content creator, I find it pivotal. That's not a word. As a content creator, I find it pivotal to constantly investigate that which inspires, confounds, and disrupts creativity. Each week, I explore one creative concept, destruct it to its creative atoms, and analyze its foundations in hopes of expanding the discovery of the creative process. This week, my 30th birthday is on Friday.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
So I can hear you rolling your eyes, right? Everyone under 30 but not 29 is low-key judging my age, old ass nigga. Everyone over 30 but not 31 is telling me to calm down. But I'm not like Magic Johnson or any one of your faves who said I've lived life without regrets. I have plenty of regrets. You know what I mean? I should have went to French 2 freshman year. Okay, I failed it and therefore it set me up on the path of survival rather than excellence. I should have graduated before I uprooted myself and moved to New Orleans to teach. That was just a terrible idea. And I should have gone out. I should not have gone outside of my budget to produce sounds from the underground. Like, I'm still paying that shit off. God damn. And I know that you learn from those mistakes, but I could have learned better. They say a wise man learns from the mistakes of others. So I wasn't always so wise. But I'm not here to talk about me being 30. Okay, it's okay. I want to talk more about 30 itself. I feel like somebody lied to me, Matt. For those fortunate or foolish enough to go to college, we all had the stark realization that life was so not like Boy Meets World. Your best friend isn't your roommate. The love of your life isn't by your side since elementary school. Your favorite teacher doesn't become your principal, who then becomes your professor, who then becomes your dean. And it goes deeper. That graduating kindergarten and going to first grade mentality is truly elementary. They said graduate high school and go to college. They said graduate college and get a job. They said get a job, find a wife, start a family, and retire. And with an elementary mindset, I grew up thinking that life was pretty much cruise control by 26, right? I should have known better because they also said don't ask, don't tell. Black fathers are a myth. There's only two genders. Sesame Street ain't a real street. The Civil War was about state rights, and Columbus discovered America, right? And as the folks who thought the sun circled the earth, they have a tendency to be wrong. As Plato paraphrased for Socrates, neither of us appears to know anything great and good, but he fancies he knows something, although he knows nothing, whereas I do not know anything, so I do not fancy that I do. In this trifling particular, then, I appear to be wiser than he because I do not fancy that I know what I do not know. From 0 to 13, the synapses on your brain are wide open, ready to absorb any and all things. At age 14 to about 26, those same synapses begin to burn off, making it harder for you to absorb information and push back. We call that youth. Your brain says you're supposed to push back on any information. After 26, though, then what? When I was a child and I got in trouble, my father would always ask me, "Why'd you do it, son?" Knowing my answers, his pre-buttal, he would say, "And don't tell me that you don't know. You're too smart for that." This was usually my opening to tell a lie, in which I usually did. So now I'm facing 30. My synapses are burnt, and I know what I'm facing. It's time to unlearn. They don't know shit. Facts are relative. Perception is reality, but your perception is not everyone's reality. So when my father said I was too smart for I don't know, my response should have been, maybe I'm not smart enough. And that's how BMO goes too deep. If you can't find it, swim for it. It's there. What you think, baby?
That was crazy, man.
Yeah.
That was inspirational. And that was because I can relate to it because it's all true from what you said.
Right. How old are you, man?
Because, you know, you said that line of people who are 29 and people who are under.
Right.
So I'm 28. I'll be 29 August 1st.
Right.
I'm closer to 29 than anything else. But I look to the people who are turning 30 in their early 30s, like, I really examine you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, I want to see how y'all are moving, what kind of things, now that y'all are over that particular milestone in life, like,
right.
You know, how much have you matured? How much of these myths about, or what we thought, these preconceived notions on adulthood, you know,
what they really are. Right.
And a lot of this shit still feels like high school, man.
Yeah, I'm not gonna
lie. A lot of this shit in all aspects of life still feels like high school, bro. Yeah. And it's like, with kids. So I think that was definitely a crazy insight.
Bet. EJ, you got any thoughts on turning 30, man? Are you 30 yet?
You know, I am 29. I'll be 30 in about 6 months.
Okay, cool.
So coming up on it, I think it's just a turning point in your life. You know, 27, 28, you start to really grow into yourself. Mm-hmm. 29, you're like, okay, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. What is my purpose?
Mm-hmm.
And wait, so you're 30 this week?
I've turned 30 on Friday.
So you know more about the actual hump when you get over it, but
it's
a real point in your life, but I think it's also an exciting point in our lives as creatives too.
Same. I think, yeah, the same thing. It's my creative perspective now is so much different, although the process is the same. I've been practicing the same scientific creative process since I was like 12. But the way that I approach it and like the perspective I have and the results and how to test my hypothesis, it's just completely different, man. So I'm blessed to be 30. We already know the stories of black men who didn't make it past their 25th, 21st birthday. Shout out to Mike
Legends.
Brown. Shout out to Trayvon. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Tupac.
Got taken from Tupac. Right. All these people who didn't fully realize their potential because their age, because they were, you know, killed or died or something happened to them at a young age and they weren't able to meet that bench.
So much shit to learn still.
Yeah.
Because we're all kind of the same.
Yeah.
It's like we're still going through things of self-actualization and realization. Mm-hmm. Still tearing down things. Yeah. And I mean, even if you want to explore traumas. And,
right. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to unlearn some shit.
And we're part of that generation where we are in a position to do that.
That's right.
I don't think our fathers and mothers were in the same, they weren't. They weren't in the same era where we're thinking about meditation, traumas,
mm-hmm.
therapy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They weren't doing yoga.
They weren't. No. Yeah, that shit
yoga
just kicked off.
That shit
was just popping off.
I mean, they were, but not like today.
Nah. No. There are yoga studios on 14th Street.
Right.
Nah. Facts.
Nah.
And they're expensive.
That was the club. Right. And they're expensive. Exactly.
They weren't doing that shit outside back then. You know what I'm saying?
Hell no.
Not on the lawn.
What?
On the lawn?
You remember? I remember the Titans when Sunshine was doing Tai Chi in the garden, and everybody was looking. Look at this weird ass fool right here. Now that's the norm.
Pioneers, bro.
Hey, pioneers
man.
We're going to talk about pioneers. Yeah.
There's definitely a new like awakening and awareness about like health, mm-hmm. and you know, well-being, mm-hmm. spiritual wellness, and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
So it's important, especially for creatives.
Oh yeah.
We don't talk about it enough.
We've heard the voice.
Uh-huh.
So let's introduce the guests now because we have multiple guests. How about you start off with the guest that you brought, and I'm starting.
So with us today, I have my Howard brother, my 202 Creates line brother, Mr. I know him as EJ. I think other people call you Elijah. He is the leader of the
Jogo. Spring 14?
Yeah, I know. Was that I forgot now. It was a year ago.
Okay.
It's been a year, bro.
18.
Oh, spring 18.
Spring 18.
That's right. We came through, crossed the burning sands of the D.C. government together.
Congratulations.
And here we are. So I got my man Elijah with me. He's the leader of the Jogo Project. Great musician. Saxophonist. I've seen you on the bass a couple of times. What's up, man? Welcome to the conversation.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to get to a more in-depth conversation with Elijah right after what's in the bag, bro. I want to know what you got in the bag, bro. All
right, but I also want to introduce the other guest that just showed up. One of my homies.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Pirate is in the building.
Chris Pirate is in the building.
And I say DMV because I know that's going to segue into an interesting topic that we have for y'all today.
Oh, DMV,
So, yeah, Chris is an extremely dope artist in general. He's done crazy murals throughout major cities. He's he's done work with major brands like Adidas and partnered with Pabst Blue Ribbon. He just recently did a mural at the museum. Shout out to the museum.
Shout out to the museum.
For that one.
Oh yeah.
Also my partner in SBO for the first one that we did, 420. BMO pulled up too. Shout out to you.
It's a good time, man.
So yeah,
just huge success.
On the show, man.
Oh yeah, it was beautiful, man. Welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, so I'm gonna get in the bag real quick.
What's in the bag, dog?
I'm a freestyler, but I got it all in the head.
Oh, hit me, man. I'm ready. You know, I'm ready.
All right, man. So you know how you're a big WWE fan?
I am.
Right? What are some of the reasons that at almost turning 30 that you still love WWE?
I love the myths. I love the storytelling. It's like soap operas, but people get punched in the face.
Yeah, it's like,
That's how I like it.
Those are the exact reasons why I love battle rap.
Uh-oh. Here we go. I'm ready.
Okay. And so I was just surfing through YouTube, you know what I mean, smoking a little Southeast breakfast. Got my little Southeast breakfast going on, you know what I'm saying? It's a nice Thursday afternoon.
That's a strand.
And you know,
no, it's a practice.
I follow a lot of
it's a religion.
Yeah, it's a religion. There you go.
Eggs and roll ups. I stumbled upon this video. I follow a lot of like rap battle blogs. That's just what I do. I sure like you watch a lot of media.
I do.
Around it. That's why you love the WWE as well. Anybody loves a combative type of sport.
That's right.
And it was this interview after a big event that they had with Smack. And if you got to know Smack, you got to know your hip hop history, Smack DVDs. Smack was the one who really innovated battle rap by taking it off the streets and putting it on camera.
Right.
And then he had the fortitude and the intelligence to be part of that DVD wave and distribute it to the mom and pops. And that's how we were able, like a kid from PG County was able to stream it off LimeWire, was just because of how on top of the digital transformations Smack was.
Right.
And this was this hood nigga from New York, right?
Right.
Beard, you know what I mean? Out there in the street with the rappers, like, you know, during the downtime when there wasn't no, like, you know, music video budgets. They was out there getting it. They had their homies with them with the, you saw
no
everything.
No permits. That's right.
Bro, I'm looking at the videos right now on YouTube, man.
You know, people can feel however they want about battle rap, but what I've always appreciated about it and its forefathers is how they've taken advantage of technology. When the DVD era ran out, they were the first to YouTube. Once the YouTube era, once they had the YouTube era, they were first to doing live streams of certain events,
That's right.
They hopped on that early as a niche market. And to put it all full circle, basically, I was watching this interview with Smack, and he had just announced that he is introducing the URL, which is the Ultimate Rap League app.
We win!
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I got excited.
This changes the game, and I feel like you can feel me.
It does.
As somebody who probably pays for the WWE.
I do. $9.99 a month. It's the best $10 I spend a month.
And why do you feel that? Because you feel like you're invested and you get the value out of it, right?
I mean, short of buying stock for the WWE, it is so cool just to see a library of history from something that I truly love.
Right.
And to be able to tune into that when these pay-per-views are like 50, 60. Remember back in the day, your mom wouldn't let you buy a pay-per-view.
Right.
Now it's $9 a month. Nice. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's good on my pockets. It's good for my brain. I get to rewatch. If I miss it, I get to rewind. You know what I mean? It's just, and it adds true value. I think Vince McMahon really kind of broke. He did his network before like individual channels were doing their network. So it was really cool to see how this old ass white man, no disrespect, but this old ass white man came up with this beautiful, innovative idea. I'm gonna start my own channel, get my own streaming network. Yep. And you gotta come to me for the work.
I'm the point of sale. Fuck the middleman.
Yeah, fuck him.
You know what I'm saying? And that's a great thing because, you know, the little man is now
literally
in power.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to go too deep because I know that's your segment.
Uh-oh.
But I think one thing about how Smack approached the app is not just the simple fact that he created an app. When he showed a display of it, I went and did more research. I'm like, all right, he listened to the fans. He listened to the base, but also addressed securing and capturing that outside free revenue that he was missing out on. Because they were putting their battles out on YouTube. YouTube was giving them chump change for streams.
That's right.
Right? And they and that also influences the battles, right? Because if you have a bigger budget, you can pay battles more. You can get more entertaining battles and stuff like that. So he was able to answer so many different questions and pain points that had been hurting them for the past 5 to 7 years.
Right, right.
Just by simply going to the app. And now you can stream the entire history, the entire catalog of every single Smack battle that happened, right? In addition to it, you can, once the video is playing, you have your own scorecard where you can mark points.
Yo, right.
There's an embedded point system within the app live. So if there's a reaction that you went crazy for, you can throw the Don DeMarco sound right there, and it syncs up with the entire community. So, like, you know, they say rap battles are normally not judged. Now you have the paid subscriber, the person who really gives a fuck and the person who really matters and is putting their dollar, giving you their opinion. So, you know, I think it's I think it's a game changer, man.
It is.
I want that to be like not just its own standalone thing. I think people are moving away from super large platforms. I feel like we've existed in Twitter and Facebook and Instagram where there's just so much exposure is broadcasting. Mm-hmm. And I think the pushback is going to be getting back to more community, small niche, because the technology, you can create your own Twitter now if you really wanted to.
Yeah, Soulja Boy did.
So, yeah, that's my in the bag. You know what I mean? Like, you always got to find the tech and the creativity of everything. So, I keep bringing that every week.
I appreciate that. Yeah. You know I love it, man. I love it.
Yeah.
Anybody got any thoughts?
Don't let the robots take over.
Don't.
I mean, it's kind of inevitable.
I'm for that.
Retweet that. All right, so now we're going to move into our special guest. We have Elijah from the Joko Project. If you could, brother, I know you're an international star. You've performed in Russia. You've performed in Southeast. So I need you to just give me a brief introduction. Let the people know who you are, where you're coming from.
My name is Elijah Jamal Balbed. I'm a D.C.-born saxophonist and composer. I grew up in Silver Spring, Maryland, then came back to D.C. to attend Howard University, where I ran into this great fellow, BMO. And I, while at Howard, was fortunate to start playing with the late, great godfather of go-go, Chuck Brown. And I got to play with him for about a year before he passed away. Then he passed away, and the whole city was in turmoil, as everybody knows. The band continued to play a little bit, but after a couple years, I felt the need to start a band of my own.
Right.
And so in 2014, the Joko Project was born. I called it Joko Project because I'm a jazz musician, but got pulled into the go-go community. And a little background, my mom grew up in Shaw.
Okay.
And she grew up on go-go, but as well as jazz, because DC has a rich jazz history as well. So she was just exposed to great music her entire life. And that kind of transpired to me when I became a musician.
Right.
And so now Joko just celebrated 5 years, actually.
That's crazy,
We've been together 5 years in different formations. Right. We've had different members, including some other HU alumni like Deacon Izzy, Imani Grace.
That's right.
Deontay Haggerty Willis and other great musicians in the area. We've collaborated with Sugar Bear, Quickfoot, the drummer from Rare Essence and Chuck Brown Band. So We try to keep the tradition alive, but also collaborate with different artists and find ways to fuse jazz and go-go, hence the Joko Project.
Right. I love that, man. Absolutely love that. I love that you're bringing go-go back into the forefront amidst the conversations of the Don't Mute DC and Mochella and all the the efforts of the DC natives recently. I just think that you're like a shining example of how you truly move the culture into the future.
I appreciate that.
And it's no problem, man. I'm, you know, you're my 202 line, you know, 202 brother.
I like how y'all stick together.
We got to, man. So I think I really appreciate that, and I want to give you your things before, you know, something. You know, we're not even going to say that, but I want to give you your things while I still can. So I can hear, I hear you have a deep history of go-go. And we had Chris Allen up here, I think, like 4 weeks ago. He was telling us that go-go stars in D.C., me and Matt are not originally from D.C., but go-go, like go-go drummers in D.C. are kind of like rock stars of their own. And then when I saw Big G wrapped in the D.C. flag after Mochella, I was like, wow. People really respect the craft. So talk to me and Matt more about the importance of go-go on a cultural level as it pertains to DC.
Yeah, well, you said the right word, which is culture.
Yeah.
And I think when I first got pulled into it, I didn't really know what to expect.
Really?
I mean, I'd always been around it. You know, I rode the 70 bus down Georgia Avenue to get to Howard sometimes, and you hear go-go blasting, you know, on the streets and everything.
Right.
But it's another thing to actually be in it.
Right.
And I didn't attend a go-go until actually playing, you know.
Yeah, until you were playing a go-go.
Getting pulled into it, basically. Okay. And what I learned is it's a culture, and it's a real important culture, and it's an important part of DC's greater culture, a huge part of it. And, you know, Chuck Brown was like the unofficial mayor when he was alive. And when he passed away, you really felt that because it was just such a depressing feeling, you know. And the city really, really showed their love for him like all those decades.
It did.
And his music got a lot of people out of some really tough times. You know, it was during the crack epidemic. Mm-hmm. It was during when people were, you know, struggling, when DC was going through some. It was after Martin Luther King being assassinated, and all this stuff kind of impacted the music, and the music gave people kind of a life and hope and all that. So they really appreciated Chuck, and that's what I'm trying to do, is just continue his spirit.
Gotcha.
You know, he had such a strong spirit and such a strong legacy.
I got you. Man, that's so powerful, man. Can you speak more? I was booking for the Funk Parade for the last few weeks, and I was really having a hard time finding young go-go bands and young go-go talent outside of the JoGo Project. Is there a future of go-go that's already on the rise that we don't see? What are your thoughts on that?
I think there are some younger bands. A lot of the younger bands tend to go, I mean, typically they're kind of fusing go-go with other styles, like we are.
Exactly.
But I have been told that we kind of like, we're known for kind of keeping that old school pocket going. But you know, the bounce beat is real popular.
Yeah.
You got bands that are fusing, like Black Alley, fusing rock elements with, you know, go-go and kind of all these different influences. So I do think there should be more, with all the history and all the people that exist in DC and the greater DMV, and some great young musicians too. There should be more young bands, I think.
I agree with you. I agree with you. What was it? 2-3 weeks ago, we had a young lady in here, Ayanna Ford, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. She came in here with a silver platter and handed us our own ass. Yeah, I mean, here's your own ass. All right. And I want to bring Chris into this conversation because I think you're a pivotal part of this too. She was giving us a perspective from the native side. She said that there are a plethora or an abundance of gentrifiers, and she identified gentrifiers as anybody not from DC, either displacing or taking part of, or even taking ownership of any creative alleys in DC. And then, you know, as part of the Funk Parade again, I noticed that the demographic, the DC native demographic, is real, not for better, not for worse, they're real close about what they have, what they own, and what they talk about. So I wanted to kind of finish up our part three of this conversation, which is about gentrification and the new renaissance of DC. Do you think there's a place for people like Matt and myself, who aren't originally from here, to add to the culture without displacing people who are already foundations?
I'm glad you said that. A friend of mine recently posted something, a friend of mine from Chicago, actually a great artist, Dante Pope.
Yep.
And the comments, there were at least 50 comments on that, and there was just so much great insight on that.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I was born in D.C., grew up in Silver Spring.
Right.
Asterisk.
Yeah. Call you a gentrifier.
I'm from Fort Worth.
So I'm glad you said that, because I came back.
Southeast Maryland.
Right.
Right.
But I came back to D.C. to, in a sense, get D.C. money.
That's right.
So that post alone forced me to be more critical of myself.
Okay.
Because I used to call myself a D.C. native, which I was born in the city. Mm-hmm. We lived here till I was like 3 or 4.
Right.
But my mom didn't want me going to D.C. public schools.
Hey.
You know? So we left. And so as, you know, as this kind of rapidly gentrifying city gets whiter and whiter and less chocolate.
Yeah.
As somebody that, you know, proclaims to want to be a part of the DC culture and represent DC culture, I need to be honest with myself.
Okay.
That I am a gentrifier. In a way, you know.
That's interesting.
But what am I doing with that? You know, with that platform and with that voice, in a way.
Chris, do you have any thoughts before I dive in?
Well, I have an interesting perspective about this, right? I'm born in Southeast, like, raised partly there, partly on the borderline, partly where if you throw a rock, I'm technically in Maryland across the street because I can go to a like kind of somewhat of a better high school, right? At a point. But I also lived in Cali, New Mexico as a kid. I always came back here, right? And even as an adult, as an artist, the last 8 years I spent my life in basically in New York and Miami. And I'm back here. I have a business in D.C.
Right.
I have a D.C. address. I'm back home. A lot of people, Matt can acclaim to this, a lot of people who see me as an artist now remember me as growing up in the music scene. And so I'm very much part of this. You know what I mean? But I've been a gentrifier, a black gentrifier.
Oh, wow.
In Brooklyn.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Break that down.
I've been a curator and art director of basically a gentrification project in Miami. You know what I mean? So basically, I mean, when I moved to Brooklyn, my choice was to pay for low income, move to Brooklyn, move to the hood, because I was working in the film and comics industry, right, as an illustrator. So I lived in the hood, not because I'm from there, not because that's what I'm used to, which it is the truth, but it's because I had to, right? And they're all, everybody around me in Brooklyn, most of those kids or people, even my age, didn't even ever go in the city.
Really?
Or leave Brooklyn, and I'm going there I'm going to Manhattan every day.
Right.
My life, though we look similar, my life and their life completely different.
Right.
The hope I have, huge compared to the disparity or the small little world. You know what I mean? And you know, being from the hood, seeing that with new eyes, and especially a city that I don't really relate to. When I'm in D.C., it's easy to relate again, right? But when I'm somewhere else, it's not. And so I used to make fun of myself all the time for being a gentrifier in Brooklyn. And then when I got hired onto to art direct a mural project.
Right. That was air quotes.
Let's keep an eye on those mural projects, right? Because really what they are, beautification projects too, right?
Exactly.
Urban renewal.
Exactly what it is. It's a gentrification project. And so I was tasked with creative directing, which me as someone who comes from absolutely nothing, it's hard for me not to turn that down, right?
Of course.
So I did that in Miami and I quit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So coming back here, hearing this conversation, I just hear it from so many different directions. Now here I relate to it more on the end of being from here, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also know the feeling of being the opposite of everywhere else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And though I'm black, and though like it almost feels even worse because I'm in Little Haiti with my own store, my own gallery in there, and low key, we're meeting with their building owners about them knocking them down and what they're gonna do with it. And so like I almost feel covert because I look like you, this and that, and so it kind of feels weird. You know what I mean?
So I think I've had a lot of time to mull over these conversations.
Right,
it's always on Twitter, all over the place. Like it's kind of a battle of thought going on right now, and I think we're all just kind of working to converge to a point of agreement, hopefully. But in me trying to converge in my own agreement, I feel like there's a distinct difference between transplants and gentrifiers.
Okay.
I think that underlying factor that separates the two is intent. For example, you talked about the Harlem Renaissance and how many people who ushered that or help push that movement forward were not originally from Harlem or even New York.
Right.
You know, many of them from all over. You know, some came from even from Canada.
Right.
You know what I mean? To participate.
Right.
And I think it's interesting that we're having these conversations now, but both Chuck Brown and our mayor for life were not born in D.C.
Fair point.
Our mayor for life
Didn't
even start his civil rights activism in D.C. He started that in Memphis.
Right.
He went to high school in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's from Mississippi originally.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Chuck Brown is from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what are we talking about? We are applauding some of our legends in retrospect because they were transplants who added value to the city with intent.
Right.
They paid their dues.
Oh, there you go.
And they were also servants of the city.
Right.
And in being servants of the city and providing something of value for people in the city to grow up on with and thrive and and provide better conditions for us as a community, it's like, how can you hate on the potential next ones coming up?
That's right.
And it's so early in our stories. Like, if gentrification is really the issue, then the people who have no intentions of doing anything with our community should be the ones who we pinpoint, not the people who are getting the funds to actually put out good projects that benefit people in the city. I don't see how you can counter that.
I mean, I'm 100% with you, man. But yeah. I think it would be foolish to say that there aren't any black gentrifiers in the city.
Oh, no, I didn't say
that.
Because
I know them. Yeah. And what's crazy is after Ayanna came in here and handed our ass, I went through my followers list. I was watching stories on Instagram. I was looking at people on Facebook, just watching the surroundings, my surroundings in the creative space. And I did realize some people are here to displace. Some people aren't here to add to the culture. Some people are trying to replace the culture. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a very dangerous precedent to set. Like I said, when I was doing, in reaction to the funk parade, I had a lot of people jump in my DMs or send me emails or give me a call saying that maybe I was on the wrong side of this gentrification side, that maybe the funk parade was a system of gentrification. And to which I had to agree to a point, because I don't think we did a good enough job trying to engage the same community that was there the Tuesday before at Mochella. In fact, I didn't see anybody from Mochella at the funk parade, right? So I'm keeping that in mind, and I'm thinking about how can we, as transplants who do have a good intent, how can we take that energy and transfer it to other people so that they can also add and not displace? I think one way, like the DC Natives picture, I didn't go to that.
No.
It looked dope as hell. The first one looked dope. The second one looked dope. The third one would be dope. Yeah. And the third one, I still won't be there.
No.
Because I don't feel like that's my place.
No.
You know what I mean? I can double tap and like. I can call Tony Lewis and be like, yo, good job. I can go to Spice Suite, get some cinnamon, tell her good job. But other than that.
Right. I mean, also, I think it's real. Like, just because you're from DC don't mean you're a good person who contributes value to the city.
True.
Like, just because you're a native doesn't mean that you contribute. You like the space that you occupy is benefiting others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now for the overarching reasons and the macroeconomics and social issues behind that, that's a discussion that we can have all day.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, it comes down to intent and a record of the work that you do and how you treat people here too. Even if you're not on the front lines of pushing things and pushing the culture forward in DC, it's something that we got to understand that whether we like it or not, it's a natural cycle of things that it seems to be.
Well, sorry, I was just going to say, it's like racism. You got to do more than just acknowledge it.
Right.
You have to actively, you know,
show a record of not being about that actively. Yeah. But I think since we're all creatives in the room, it's also interesting to note that one of the main drivers that causes gentrification is a strong creative arts community.
Well,
that's always the largest precursor. Mm. So it's like,
it's actually part of the structure. Yeah. I had to learn that in Miami. Like, the way it builds is they take low incomes, they market it to artists because artists need low income.
We do.
Artists come, they naturally beautify it.
Mm-hmm.
They naturally are creative and bring creative people and bring attention. That's, you know, that's kind of like novelty because people like creatives.
That's
right.
That's right.
And so then the artists set the business standard of like being able to capitalize on creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Usually that's followed by murals,
mm-hmm.
or artists just naturally start doing murals too, right? And then that raises property value, and then it prices out the artist.
Oh, wow.
And then you have what's happening in Wynwood. I had to learn the history of Wynwood, which mm-hmm. is one of the biggest art districts in America right now. And then what happens is artists get priced out, and it slowly becomes a restaurant bar district.
Okay.
Still with the murals up.
Right,
so it's a trick. And then after that, those get priced out and becomes condos.
Wow.
And the next hood, while the next hood's going through the, and that's why I was tasked learning that history to start the next hood.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's just how it goes, you know?
And that same model exists with the street musicians in D.C.
Okay.
Wow. You know, okay. I didn't know that.
How they add to the you know, you wellness so right. of the city. And then turn, you know, fast forward however many years later, now we got condos and mm-hmm. businesses trying to push them out of the areas that they've been performing in for
That's crazy.
More than decades.
That's crazy.
I got to add one more thing.
Yeah.
Right? You look at... So I think the perspective I've always had of D.C., just because even as a kid, even in middle school and in high school, I went to New Mexico, came back. Wow. High school, Cali, came back. I always come back, you know, and see, like, basically get influenced by outside and see what's important to other cities mm-hmm. and come back and realize that, oh, the things we really care about a lot here aren't that important everywhere else, right?
Right.
And so the pressure of me to be like everybody else, I didn't really feel it. But that also, if you look at a place like New York, because
mm-hmm.
D.C. has a complex, if you ask me.
No, I agree.
Because
I went to New York this weekend, and there was literally a nigga on the corner. He said, where are you from? I said, I'm from D.C. He was like, oh, I'm trying to put you on because you're not from here.
I was out there too, bro. We should have linked.
Oh, damn it, man.
I'm sorry, bro.
But, you know, like the thing is, DC feels like it should be important, so it's self important,
right?
And it should be important because it's the nation's capital. That's what creates the complex,
okay?
Right?
Okay.
If you ask me, it creates the complex because it's the capital of America, but it doesn't get treated like it. Mm-hmm. So the people feel self important. It's the capital of America, but almost nobody knew about Go-Go outside of DC until like 2 weeks ago, right? So, and let's be real, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel you.
And then let's say this on record.
Yeah.
In 2 years, when Mochella's actually kicking off with this, you know what I mean, festival and things like this, there are going to be DJs from LA coming to sample it, and it's going to be like dubstep is to reggae.
I agree.
You get what I'm saying? There's going to be a DJ format sampling Go-Go and pushing it all over the world. That's going to happen, right? But as a nation's capital, it bothers people that it took so long or this and that. But if you look at places that we look up to as DC natives, like real important cities that are really the capital, New York.
Right.
Or LA, they are their own capitals of America in some way, right? Influential capitals, right? They're all influenced by outsiders.
That's right.
New York is, nobody's from New York in New York.
No.
Everybody, even like, unless you're second generation, but the New York is created by outsiders. That's what makes New York what it is.
Yeah.
LA, very same much thing. The same.
Yeah.
So we want to be a big city, but big city takes outside influence.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? Because you can't just have that self-reflection. Because everybody can't relate to that.
That's true.
You know, as you want to be a big city, it has to be more relatable to other cities. You know, like Jamaicans, Dominicans, Europeans, they all relate to New York in some way.
They do.
LA too. You know what I'm saying? So DC is just very cannibalizing culturally. And that's what creates such a deep culture, but it's also what keeps it secret. Mm. And keeps the city feeling like it's not as important as it should be.
Couldn't say it any better.
Yeah, true. I think I think you're absolutely right. May 20th is now DC Native Day. I think that is absolutely amazing, and I think it'll be amazing in 5 years when Lil Timmy and Lil Livia say they from Trinidad and they come into DC Native photo shoots with their blonde hair. I think that'll be very interesting.
I think it's crazy.
That'll be wild. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
I know
we
got
like, well, you're a DC native.
Start wrapping it up, but I think it's interesting how like we long for the days when the Caribbean Day parades were here and stuff. Mm-hmm. And those Caribbean Day parades were literally a celebration of multiple cultures with things in common coming together as a show of force. To celebrate with each other. It wasn't siloed, you know? And so for us to talk about the good old days when the Caribbean Day Parade was going, whether they broke out in fights and stabbings, that's a whole nother thing. But, you know.
Yeah. So I think that's we did a pretty good job wrapping up the gentrification conversation.
That wraps up our series.
Yeah,
series on gentrification.
Parts. That's right. We had our own creative, then we had somebody come in here and hand us our ass, and then we have two gentlemen in here from the DMV area.
Came back with also some support.
Exactly. So I don't feel so butt hurt this time, you know what I mean? Because I was butt hurt. You hear me?
I had to redeem myself.
I did.
Yeah.
I had to have a couple.
Damn, I'm going
to
go listen back now.
Yeah. So with that being said, we're going to go ahead and start wrapping up the show.
Yeah.
I think you got a good little.
So let's wrap up with our Tools of the Trade segment. I like to ask everybody to say their social media platforms and stuff that they use and when they can see your work. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, say in advance kind of what tools are really helping you in your creative and entrepreneurial process right now. It doesn't necessarily have to be kind of a standard thing like a laptop or a particular program or an app, but it can also be like a CBD pen or something that kind of keeps you in the right mental state.
So right.
Follow me on Twitter at Backpack Matt. Follow me on Instagram at Mr. Backpack. And I would say my tool for the trade, and I'm going to take a cop out this time, is YouTube.
Okay.
I went to Stanford University, and people kind of be like, oh, yeah, you went to Stanford, you went to Stanford. But I mean, for the most part, I was fucking around, you know.
Okay.
So, you know,
transparency.
I did learn though, but I went to grad school and all that. But what I value most and what I really use is the education that I went out to obtain for myself, and to get it for free on certain platforms, and to like hone in exactly on a platform like YouTube, type in something super specific, and to find like videos. Now, whether they were in perfect English or not, it doesn't matter. But the YouTube resources were there. You know, so it. You know, in a day and age when they used to tell us to pull ourselves by our bootstraps, I think that's a controversial statement to make. But I think that the resources are starting to be there where, you know, we can really build ourselves up. So shout out to you two for self-edification.
Yeah. Okay, my social media is EJB Jazz. That's my personal. And then Jogo Project is The Jogo Project on IG and Facebook. And you can go to thejogoproject.com as well. And we'll be playing at the DC Jazz Festival coming up, so check that out. But let's see. I think I got a weird answer for my tool of choice, which is the people. Because you talked about, you know, the potential and the likeliness of technology taking over.
Yeah.
And I think it's time to, like, get back to the days of wheat paste posters. And
yes, sir.
So you're taking it even further.
You know,
back,
people
so.
Calling each other instead of texting each other. You know, that's, you in know, just to more community and more personable, you know, approaches.
Fire.
Yeah. Yeah. That more than ever. I totally agree.
Yeah. You can find your boy, as always, at BMO Brown, B-E-M-O Brown, on all social media platforms. Also go to BMOAuthentic.com. That's BEMOAuthentic.com. Make sure you get some of those fresh updates. My tools for the trade, though. You know, not giving a fuck.
Hey.
That has been my tool like the last week. I have been not giving a fuck. Whether it's that. Like sending out invoices that I know are overpriced. Ooh. Or responses to certain social media trends or topics. Like, honestly, just like, I don't really give a fuck. To be honest with you, I don't want to spend my energy on that. I don't want to spend my time on that. I'd rather do something more productive, like create. If I could paint a mirror outside a museum like my man Chris did, give me that. I'm not trying to argue with your
ass
on Twitter.
You can help me, bro. You can help me.
Say less, brother. Say less. Over to you, man.
Oh, I'm Chris Pirate with a Y. So Chrispirate on anything. My tool. Oh, I got this this Wacom pen, right?
Also, tablet?
No, check this. Down. So this one.
Yeah.
So two tools.
Okay.
I refused to upgrade my iPhone for a long time, right? And then I broke it painting a mural.
Damn.
So I upgraded to the whatever the biggest, better one that I had. And then I got this Wacom pen.
Okay.
Right, that turns your iPhone into like a tablet, but it's just like the way Wacom use for my MacBook or whatever. Like it's like
it's
a
now
dope
like
pen.
A stylus too.
Yeah, like so. Like I mean, I haven't really used it like that, but like I got it in my pocket. I feel important. You know what I mean?
I see you just pulled out a little protective bag just now too. I saw that. Man. Yeah. It's your sword, brother. All right, well, we want to thank y'all again for eavesdropping in on another great conversation over the shoulder. You can join us again next week. Follow us on Instagram at OTSPod. And
at Twitter at OTS.pod. OTS. I think we have it mixed up, but you know, come fuck with us.
Yeah. You'll find us, goddammit.
It. You all keep coming back every week.
Keep coming back and catching these gems that we're dropping. Peace. All right?
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.